Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with long overdue changes in drug sentencing announced by Attorney General Holder, and speak with California Superior Court Judge James Gray, who was a former federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office and ran for Vice President of the United States in 2012 as a Libertarian Party's candidate. We'll discuss a federal prison system that has grown 800% since the 1980s and the moral and human cost to the United States, which has 5% of the world's population but holds 25% of the world's prisoners. Then we'll speak with the filmmaker of the Academy Award-nominated Best Documentary Feature of 2012, The House I Live In. Eugene Jarecki joins us to discuss the sentencing reforms which were called for in his powerful and wide-ranging examination of the prison industrial complex and our failed war on drugs in a film that takes viewers from ravaged inner-city communities to overcrowded prisons with drug users, prison guards, narcotics officers, and judges all acknowledging a broken system that might now begin to change direction. Then finally, we will speak with Michael Cohen, a columnist at Foreign Policy, who previously served in the State Department as chief speechwriter for the United States representative at the United Nations. We will discuss his recent article at the UK Guardian, Threat to America? The size of our own military budget, that examines our bloated military budget compared to what he sees as the paltry foreign policy threats outlined by the departing deputy head of the CIA as clear and present dangers. And joining us now is James Gray, the author of Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It. He is a California Superior Court judge, a former federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Los Angeles, and in 2012 he ran for Vice President of the United States on the Libertarian Party ticket with Gary Johnson. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Gray.
Well, Ian, thank you. It's nice to be with you. And in your introductory comments, you used three very strong adjectives with which I agree with all of them: long overdue changes, failed war on drugs, and broken system. You're absolutely right in all three of those analyses.
Well, the Attorney General did say, just quoting him, we must face the reality that, as it stands, our system in too many ways is broken. And with an outsized, unnecessary large prison population, we need to ensure that incarceration is used to punish, to deter, and to rehabilitate, not merely to warehouse and to forget.
He's right. This is coming probably 25 years too late, but I'd rather have it today than tomorrow. We've got to start being smart on crime instead of tough on crime. Now, I know politically, of course, power in incarceration sells. It started with the Nixon administration, really, early 1970s, where they literally knew, Ian, that drug treatment works far better than incarceration, but they also saw enormous political advantages in going into incarceration instead. And don't take it from me, take it from Kleindienst, his attorney general at the time, and he said, we were absolutely overwhelmed at the beneficial response we got politically, even though they knew that it was harmful for our country and the people.
So was that a part of the kind of law and order hysteria? Was that the idea that it's easier to stir up people's paranoia than to appeal to their better senses?
Yes, that's the problem. You have people. I have had two sitting congressmen here in Orange County tell me when they were in office that, Jim, you don't understand. Most people in Washington realize the war on drugs is not winnable, but it's eminently fundable, and they're addicted to the drug war funding. So it's paranoia regarding politics, but it's also money. It's unbelievable the amount of money that people are making by pursuing this failed and hopeless policy of drug prohibition.
And do we have any accounting on how much we've spent since President Nixon began the war on drugs and started the Drug Enforcement Administration?
It depends, of course, how you do the accounting. It's easily $1 trillion. And have we gotten our money's worth? The answer categorically is no. There's more drugs today available than ever before. The prices are lower. Anybody that wants to get them can. It's easier for our children to get methamphetamines, marijuana, or whatever, if they want to, than it is a six-pack of beer. And even worse than that, because Governor Johnson said this well in the campaign, that about 90% of all of the drug problems are drug prohibition problems, the drug money. Yes, there are drug problems too, and we're not minimizing them, but what you do is you treat marijuana like alcohol, for example, hold people accountable for what they do, like we do with alcohol and anything else, and then regulate and control these drugs. You do away with the quality control problems. You stop luring children into youth gangs to sell drugs and the rest, and start really making some progress. And, of course, marijuana is the largest cash crop today in the state of California. Number two is grapes, by the way. So let's take that crop anyway, make sure that we regulate, control it, no advertising, but tax it and use that money instead of going to juvenile street gangs and Mexican drug cartels and Hell's Angels and other thugs. Use it to pay our firefighters, pay our teachers, and fix our highways. It's not a hard decision to make, and we are in the process now of making it, led by the states recently of Colorado and Washington. This war on drugs, certainly war on marijuana, is close to over because it's so transparent that it's failed.
And again, I'm speaking with James Gray, who's the author of Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It. He is a California Superior Court judge and former federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Los Angeles. And in 2012, he ran for vice president of the United States on the Libertarian Party ticket with Gary Johnson. So given that back when the war on drugs started, the Nixon administration knew that treatment was better than incarceration, but then decided incarceration was politically more popular. What do you take from what the Attorney General said today in terms of changing the focus? One of his many suggestions was to deal more with treatment and reduce the mandatory minimum sentence for low-level drug offenses, expand eligibility for compassionate release, and in general, calling for question zero tolerance policies and other policies that lead to the school to prison pipeline. Those are some of what was announced.
Ian, I think that we will look back at this pronouncement as a watershed, as a turning point. I'm here to tell you as a judge, and most of my colleagues agree, that mandatory minimum sentences don't work. No one in the legislature, Congress, or anywhere else can determine an appropriate sentence without knowing who the perpetrator is, what the circumstances are, who the victims are, whether they were injured or not, the circumstances, etc. And it's just resulted in untold injustices. Everyone has lost except the prison guards unions and things like that. So it's about time. We need this. It's come many, many, too many decades late. But I think we'll look back and justifying the discussion, allowing some other political office holders to now stand up and be able to do the same thing in the states. So I'm very encouraged by it. It doesn't go nearly far enough, but I'm really encouraged by what happened today.
And as a former U.S. attorney, do you think that the idea of directing groups of U.S. attorneys to examine sentencing disparities and development recommendations to address them, and then for the U.S. attorney to designate a prevention and reentry coordinator, is that somebody that would, or is that a way to sort of to divert people into treatment as opposed to incarceration?
Well, yes. My problem is that it makes as much sense. You know who Robert Downey Jr. is, a very gifted actor, but he has had a lifelong heroin problem. It makes as much sense to me to put Robert Downey Jr. or people like that in jail for his heroin problem as it would have Betty Ford in jail for her alcohol problem, you know, the wife of President Gerald Ford, and she was a self-acknowledged alcoholic. It's the same thing. It's a medical issue. Those people should not be in the criminal justice system at all. But if Robert Downey Jr., Betty Ford, you or I drive a motor vehicle while impaired by any of these substances, including alcohol, which is my drug of choice, bring them to me as a judge. That's a crime. What's the difference? Because now, by their actions, they're putting our safety at risk. But otherwise, and again, being a libertarian and proud of it, and I'll stand on this anytime, it makes as much sense for the government, in my view, to hold me accountable for what I put into my body as it does what I put into my mind. It's none of their business. Hold me accountable for my actions instead. So I don't think the government should be diverting people into treatment unless by their actions, they've run afoul of the criminal justice system. If that's the case, then I did this as a judge right away for alcohol-related offenses, and because of people's actions, I was able to take about 60% of them off alcohol for at least 6 months, which is as long as I was able to keep statistics. That form of coercion, I think, is not only appropriate, but very beneficial for everybody.
Well, apparently of the 219,000 federal inmates behind bars, half of them are serving time for drug-related offences. And apparently in terms of recidivism, about 40% of former federal prisoners and more than 60% of former state prisoners are rearrested or have their supervision revoked within 3 years after their release, often for technical and minor violations of their probation.
That's true. You know, we have tens of thousands of people in state prison today that did nothing but smoke marijuana. Why? For the reasons you just said. For one reason or another, they were incarcerated, then placed on parole, and then smoked marijuana, and that's a violation of their probation or their parole, and back to jail or prison they go. That's stupid. That's senseless. But we just have to, by the way, don't get me wrong, if somebody is going to sell marijuana or heroin or whatever for money, that's a violation of law and they should be in prison, but probably not 10 years, maybe 5 or 2 years would be enough, or 30 and the rest. But if people violate the law intentionally to make money, I think that they should be held accountable and that should be a prison sentence. But if we were to regulate and control this, we don't have people selling bootleg alcohol anymore. By the way, we don't have Mexican drug cartels raising illegal vineyards in our national forests to compete with Robert Mondavi either. They could, but there's no money in it. So you take the money away by regulating and controlling it, taxing, no advertising, be less available for our children than it is today, just like Portugal found out, and Uruguay is beginning to find out.
Well, apparently one of the proposals that the Attorney General has offered is that the amounts that people are incarcerated for should not be an issue, as well as, of course, the disparity between crack cocaine and powdered cocaine, which is a fairly glaring anomaly. The argument is, of course, that the jails are not filled with drug kingpins, but minor users and dealers. Is that your experience?
That is true. The low-hanging fruit, you know, you have a lot of minorities that are selling drugs on the street corner. You know, they're selling dime bags of cocaine or something, $10 a hit, and they sell three. They end up with 10, 15 years in prison. So, I mean, it's really a lot easier. You can snatch up all of those that you want to. They're not kingpins. They are probably drug-addicted, selling drugs to support their habit. Those people should not be in prison. They should be in rehabilitation. But, I mean, and let's not carry this too far. Obviously, it's going to make a big difference if you're selling a ton of cocaine or just an ounce or just, you know, a couple of grams. So, and I'm sure that Attorney General Holder didn't mean it to that degree. But when I was a federal prosecutor, we had a RICO violation, a racketeering type thing. And if you were convicted of that, there were enhancements. It was a lot more serious. I chose, in many instances, not to use it because I didn't feel, as a prosecutor, in my discretion, that that was what Congress had in mind. Unfortunately, a lot of prosecutors have gone away from that. They do it because they can, not just because it's the right thing to do. And so I think that's what Attorney General Holder is addressing. But the better thing is to repeal mandatory minimum sentences in their entirety and just put up frameworks and allow probably a sentence commission of three judges to go on all to sentence on all three of the judges' calendars. We'll get a lot more uniformity that way instead of trying to do it artificially with mandatory minimum sentences.
And Judge Gray, let's look into the politics of it. You, of course, ran for Vice President of the United States on the Libertarian Party ticket with Gary Johnson in 2012. And a lot of our listeners are on the liberal side of the political spectrum, and you're a libertarian. So there seems to be some considerable common ground here between libertarians and liberals. And
we are classic liberals. We really would repeal this so-called Patriot Act. We're aghast that the government is collecting this information, not only on our telephone calls, emails, and I had that happen to me. I can go into it if you want. But also, they can do the same thing under that rationale with our credit card records and our travel records and things like that. It's simply wrong. and we have those classic liberal values. We would not have drones flying overhead surveilling us without a judicial warrant. Libertarians are classic liberals. We're also classic conservatives. So we believe in financial responsibility, but also social acceptance and the rule of our Constitution. So I feel very much akin to liberals.
Well, I was going to also suggest here that there's a conservative group form called Right on Crime, which is makes a conservative case for reforming the prison system. And it has Jeb Bush, former Florida governor and somebody that's often cited as a possible presidential candidate, and Edwin Meese, the former attorney general in the Reagan administration, and Newt Gingrich. So it seems across the board. My understanding is that there's been considerable prison reform even in Texas, which is often considered the harshest of all of the incarcerations in this country.
Texas has made really leaps and bounds progress, that they actually reduced the incarceration level, but I don't remember, 5 or 10%, and used money for treatment instead and for assistance in that regard. Crime went down. The prison population went down as well. So if they can do it in Texas, for heaven's sake, we should certainly follow that example all around the country.
So what's your sense then, since there's so much common ground here that can be nurtured. What's your sense of a political strategy moving forward to give the Attorney General some wind at his back and to not just to have this as which happens so often nowadays, you have great rhetoric but no follow through?
It's called leadership. You know, you should be making your reputation from the beginning. From every day that you're in office, you should be setting up your reputation. That's what Governor Gary Johnson did in New Mexico. You know, he stood up for liberties. He also left the state with a $1 billion surplus when he was done after his two terms in the governor's New Mexico. It just takes leadership. He stood up and said in 1999 that the war on drugs was a failure and has been acting on that ever since. He had no constituency. So it's just a question of finding leaders. Attorney General Holder has turned into a leader, at least on this area, somewhat late in his tenure, but I'll take it. It's just a question of leadership, and Ronald Reagan was a leader in that regard. He said, this is what I stand for, this is what I did, this is why. You can agree or disagree, but he stands up and says, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing, and these are the reasons, like it or not. And that's called leadership. We don't have any leadership, particularly in our country today. I was glad to see the Attorney General stand up and at least begin that process.
And what about followship? That's my real question.
No kidding. Well, you know, politicians are really good at followership. They'll follow where the votes are. And you mentioned my book, and thank you for that. When I endorse it, if people ask me to, I will say it's okay to discuss drug policy. Just that alone. If people allow themselves to discuss these issues, they will turn away from these failed policies. It's just a question, though, of looking soft on crime or something like that. So no one is going to accuse Attorney General Holder of being soft on crime. No one would accuse me of really being that either, being with my background, a Navy JAG attorney and federal prosecutor and judge. So it's just a question of giving people the authority, the ability to discuss these issues of three strikes, of mandatory minimum sentences, of drone attacks, of drone surveillance. All of these things, we need leadership, and we're suffering from a lack of it from my standpoint.
Well, James Gray, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, it's a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again, and thanks for what you do, Ian. You're really helping the cause.
Oh, well, thank you. Again, I've been speaking with James Gray, who's the author of Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It. He is a California Superior Court judge, former federal prosecutor in the United States Attorney's Office in Los Angeles, and in 2012, he ran for vice president of the United States on the Libertarian Party ticket with Gary Johnson. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with the filmmaker of the Academy Award-nominated film about the failed war on drugs.
Revolving doors, what have I done? For someone on the TV.